Uncensored with Penny Faree is proudly brought to you by IPSS Electronic Security.
This is Uncensored. I'm Penny Faree. Today's episode looks at land invasion on the north coast of KwaZulu-Natal. It is not a historical case. It is happening now. When I say land invasion, I mean this. Privately owned land taken without consent, plots measured and sold by people with no legal authority, permanent brick houses built, electricity and water connected unlawfully. All of this continuing despite court orders meant to stop it. This is not a story about desperate people putting up shacks overnight. Documents I have seen show that many buyers paid substantial sums of money believing the land was legitimately for sale. They were told the land fell under a traditional authority or community control despite being privately owned. They now live on land they do not legally own without title deeds and at real risk of losing everything. At the center of the story is a landowner who did what the law requires. He went to court, he obtained eviction orders, he followed due process, and still nothing changed. Today, we ask why courts fail, who is responsible for enforcing them, and what happens when the law exists but does not act. To unpack what the law actually says, why these situations are allowed to persist, I'm joined by Gavin Steinoble. Gavin is a senior attorney and conveyancer with decades of experience in land and property law in KZN. Gavin, I want to start with the core of the issue. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Penny. Thanks for having me on.
Just to make it simple for listeners who don't understand the process, when a court grants an eviction order against unlawful occupiers, who is legally responsible for enforcing that order?
Well, the court itself acts through the sheriff of the court. So what would ordinarily happen if you get an eviction order is you'd have a warrant for eviction that's issued by the court where the court says, instructs the sheriff to go and evict the people. So if you've got a matter with good merit and the court decides in your favor that, yes, the people should be evicted, having regard to the raft of legislation which we can speak about, which protects everybody to the hilt. But when you get to the point where you've actually overcome all the obstacles and you have you've reached a point where the court says, right, this landowner is entitled to evict these people or to evict a person from a residential dwelling or whatever your rights are, you as the owner would take your warrant of execution that the court has issued, and you go to the sheriff and you'd pay the sheriff to execute the order.
Yeah.
Okay, so the system is quite obvious. That's how it should work.
So there's a process.
Yes, there is a process. There is a process in place, and then if the sheriff is impeded in any way in performing their duties, they can call on the South African Police Force to assist. So if there's any intimidation or threats or whatever, they can call on the SAP to assist them
and that's
in executing
obligation.
The order. Yeah. So now that all sounds perfect on paper and you wouldn't expect it to be an issue. Everybody knows what they have to do. But you have a lot of political interference.
That was my next follow-up question. Now, I witnessed an attempted enforcement recently where threats were made and the operation collapsed when the sheriff went to enforce the court order.
The sheriff was intimidated.
Yeah, he was intimidated and there was lack of police support. The police were there. And the public order police were meant to be there to support the police, but they didn't step in and they didn't have a role. So now when the legal consequences of this, we can say it was a big failure. It basically amounts to the breakdown of law, even though the court technically says it remains valid. What happens next? So the eviction didn't happen. The authorities didn't step in. Now what? What does the landowner now meant to do?
So as a society, we all subscribe to the idea, the concept of having a government, and we give the government an absolute monopoly on power. They can have the police, they can have the army, but we trust them to make good and sound laws and to uphold those laws.
Yeah.
And this is obviously a failure of that. And it's your landowner in a situation like that can, one is he can obtain an interdict, for example, against the sheriff and the SAP, compelling them to do their job.
Okay, so he's back to at the court.
He's back to at the court. Yeah. Now we all know that a matter like this would have had a high court Would have been taken to the High Court. Yes. You can't take it to the magistrates or the regional court. Yeah. It's sufficiently of value and importance that it can only be heard by the High Court. And I know what it costs to have an advocate represent you in the High Court. Yeah. You know, a senior counsel is, you know, between 30 and 40,000 rand a day.
How much would it cost to get an eviction order in the House?
It's always difficult. Depends how much of a runaround you're being given by the other side. So if they are going to be disingenuous and put up false defences that you now have to overcome and disprove, you could spend several weeks in court. You know, and, if you ask me how much, it's how long is a piece of string? You know, it depends on the matter. Okay. But you could easily spend 1 million or 2 million rand on something like this.
So what happens? Protracted,
you know, and then you've also got, you know, the costs of the sheriff. You know, they would have to, for example, hire machinery to
the landowner.
Buildings.
So the landowner has
and the landowner has to pay that. It normally has to issue some kind of guarantee to the sheriff, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, the costs are never ending. And when you're dealing with a landowner that is well-funded, that's fine. They have rights. When you're dealing with a landowner who's marginal and can't even afford day one in court,
then what happens to
Their rights should be especially protected by the courts, and especially, but they're not because they can't afford it. So
if you don't have financial endurance, you know, is there to afford to keep returning to court? Mm. What happens then? Are we seeing a system where access is only, you know, depends on whether you do have the financial pull?
You have the financial pull. And, you know, there's a lot of legislation which we can talk about, but it's become quite a dense thing. And you need somebody who's a fairly expert in dealing with eviction matters to navigate those waters. Because, you know, it's a funny thing that if you as the applicant, you know, have one misstep, you start again, you know, whereas it always appears that the, you know, the respondents in the matter get endless postponements and endless opportunities to revive their flagging case throughout the matter. So it does seem one-sided. One of the things that happened in this country is that, you know, the land issue has always been a pernicious one. It's always been sort of we know we had the Group Areas Act. We had people that were forcibly moved from areas to make them you know, to make them all white. And then, you know, people often forget that I did a lot of families that, for example, had to were displaced from the Transkei and the Ciskei areas, the, you know, white farmers who were told, listen, this is now going to be a Bantustan state or, you know, this is group areas, this is reserved for Africans, you guys are going to have to, we're going to pay you out and you're going to have to go somewhere else. Now, it's fine saying you get paid out, but it's quite another thing, you know, saying goodbye to your farm, moving your family to another district or another province where you know nobody and starting your life again. So the inconvenience was to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very heated topic. I want to just bring you back to when in affidavits, which I saw, the buyers were told the land in this particular case. We're not going to mention the names yet because it is in court and the matter is currently sub judice.
Yeah.
Apparently. But the land fell under, they were told the land fell under traditional authority or community control, despite being privately owned. And what happens now to those buyers who acted in good faith but now face evictions? And some of those plots that they bought from, and I'm putting it in, you know, brackets, traditional authority, one lady bought, paid 89,000 rand for 30 meter. So what happens? Is there recourse for them?
Yeah, so these are not destitute people, obviously. Because,
yes, they're not. Yeah, the poor are the poorest.
To come up with almost 100,000 rand in cash is a lot of money. You know, it's not a domestic servant. And it's, you know, so these are not the poorest of the poor. This is a criminal opportunism.
Okay.
Where people who know better are acting as if they have the right to sell land which is not theirs.
Yeah.
And taking money from unsuspecting and innocent people. And people like that should have committed a massive fraud and they should be prosecuted and they should be imprisoned. Because you've taken a lot of money from people. And the money didn't go to the owner of the land. It was pocketed by thieves.
And now the owner's obviously paying a huge amount to try and get the land back. Mm. But if they unlawfully occupied the land and they are pleading ignorance, I mean, are they protected? Is ignorance of the law an argument?
Absolutely not. You know, otherwise yeah. I'd
so they lose their money.
I willfully and ignorantly stroll onto somebody's property and start building on it. It's nonsense.
Okay.
You know, that's why we have a system of land in this country, and all land is surveyed and it's got a title deed. And you find out when you buy land who you're buying it from, and you transfer it in the deeds office. So that's how it works.
Yeah.
We live in a society where there's two standards. You know, there's the standard which is westernized and first world, and our land law is really, really good. I mean, you know, this country's properly surveyed. Everybody's got a title deed that needs a title deed, and then we've got these areas which are tribal areas. And just before 1994, a lot of areas were put into trust, you know, like the Bafokeng Trust and the Ngonyama Trust. And this province has one out of every 3 hectares in KwaZulu-Natal is in that trust. Now, the land issue, I think also in my personal view, stems from the fact that one third of this province cannot be bought by people who want to own their own land. Because it is in the trust.
There's no title deed.
They can't get a title deed. So they work on a system of permissions to occupy, which isn't title at all. I mean, you can't take your permission to occupy to the bank, for instance, and say, I'd like to bond my property to do some improvements or to plant some crops.
And that's
why. Or to buy some equipment. And so people who live there are in a perpetual servitude. You know, they're serfs forever because they can't own the land that they live on. And so I can understand why there'd be some kind of pressure to go and find land that you can buy. Now, we did our land redistributions in this country, and it's an ongoing process. And it was by and large successful in the sense that, you know, a lot of displaced people put their claims in. The government then approaches the landowner and says, look, these people were here, they were forcibly removed, they need to be compensated somehow. The reason that you can't just go to the current owner, when they were displaced in 1913, for argument's sake, is that this is probably 6 owners later, and he fairly paid for the property. So it would be grossly iniquitous to take his property from him that he paid for, that he developed, probably built dams and plowed fields, broke ground, and did a lot of work to get the farm to where it was. So what was happening is they approached it on a willing buyer, willing seller basis, where you said, okay, well, if you were to go to market with this, how much would you accept? And the seller, the state would go, okay, well, that's reasonable or unreasonable. But by and large, a lot of claims are settled. I think 60-odd thousand claims are settled.
But that's going to change, obviously, now with the new laws.
What was very interesting about that process, one is it did address something that needed to be addressed.
And many people feel that it wasn't, that's still, you know, the political rhetoric.
Well, most of the communities took the money because they had the option at the time. If the farm was worth 10 million rand, they'd say to the community, do you want the farm or do you want the 10 million rand? Most didn't want to farm. Okay.
Yeah.
So they took the money. All right. Those that took the land, those farms have almost without exception, have failed.
It was a failed system. They set them up to fail. Sure.
Yeah, well, you can say that. I mean, I don't think, I think if you go into communally own something, it's always going to be a failure because nobody's responsible and everybody just tries to take out what they can. Whereas, you know, if somebody's going to look after land that they own, you know, because they'd probably want their children to have it next, and they know that it's their livelihood. But when everybody owns it, nobody's really, really taking responsibility for.
And we are seeing that on the North Coast with a lot of the tribal land that they're saying belongs to the chiefs, and this land ownership is a huge dispute. I just wanted to ask you just a practical question. When I visited this particular farm, and obviously I saw the structures there, there were connections. They had electricity and water, which obviously appeared unlawfully connected. Now, what questions should immediately be asked of the municipality?
How does that happen? I mean, you know, for example, if I wanted to develop a portion of land and I wanted to subdivide it into urban and then sell that to the public, before I even start, I'm going to be embroiled in something called a spluma application.
Yes. Yeah, that's a buzzword we're talking about a lot lately.
Yeah, it's, you know, and so that's your Land Management Act, where you go to KDM and you say, look, I want to take this agricultural land. I want to subdivide it into urban. All the urban will be serviced. They'll get water and electricity connections. We're going to look after stormwater, and we're going to build proper roads. You know, that application, yes. You go to the Department of Transport, the Department of Environmental Affairs. It's a massive process.
And costly.
And by the time you've subdivided and before you can transfer these properties to owners, you have to pay for the connections to each and every site, okay?
Yeah.
So it's quite a process. So it's inconceivable to me, unless something seriously nefarious happened, that you could connect to this system that takes so much time and effort just to apply to connect to.
Yeah, and so if you, from a legal perspective, you know, the municipality's conduct or omission to act in situations like this, does it expose the council to any legal or financial liability?
Of course it will. You know, if the council is complicit in undermining the law and the landowner suffers losses as a consequence of that, he would quite fairly be able to go to the council. Now, in this case, if he's gone to enormous legal expense, okay, firstly. Yeah. Secondly, has lost control of his property, which is a valuable property, which will render, you could value it before it was invaded, and it might be worth 10 million rand.
Yeah.
And after it was invaded, it's worth zero.
Yeah.
Okay, because who's going to buy
Absolutely.
It? Who would buy a property? You know, so there's a 10 million rand claim. So, you know, there's all sorts of scenarios that play out. I mean, you know, these are state organizations, and they have an obligation statutorily to enforce the law. And so if they're complicit in circumventing the law or even breaking the law, then certainly there would be legal redress there.
Yeah. I just want to just ask you about the PA. You know, it's a word that a lot of people hear, and I just want to, for listeners who haven't really been following this situation and it's unfolding, can you give us a little brief explanation on it? And it almost seems like the law doesn't protect the landowner. It protects the occupiers. How is that, from a legal perspective, allowed?
Yeah, so PA is an abbreviation for a rather long, long-worded act. It's the prevention of illegal eviction and unlawful occupation of land act. And it was passed in 1998 legislation. And it was aimed at, you know, people who had very insecure sort of rights. You know, they were on land, but they didn't have a lease agreement, for argument's sake, or they worked for the owner and they lived on the property. And so what the Act sought to establish is that you just can't wake up one morning and say, listen, you've got to clear off.
Okay.
You have to go to court and say, listen, this person did work for me. I fairly dismissed them. And the court would then say, okay, well, what is a reasonable period to give them to leave? It didn't say they can just stay indefinitely. And what is a fair and nice way to evict them? When I say nice way, I mean everybody still smarts when you think about the forced evictions that happened, you know, in the 60s and so forth. And nobody wanted to do that kind of scenario again.
Yeah.
So they said, well, it's instead of just law into your own hands and bulldozing and, you know, you go to court, you get a court order. The court always gave a period within which they were to evict. And only after they've been given all these opportunities to voluntarily leave would you go and get a warrant for eviction, and you'd send the sheriff out and say, look, chap, you know, the court said you must be off in 3 months and you haven't made other arrangements. So, you know, now you can be evicted. So it was just to soften the blow and also to make sure that people just can't be kicked off land willy-nilly if they've been there for a long time.
Yeah.
So it was to make things fair. People always forget, and it's actually quite telling that the abbreviation is PI, Prevention of Illegal Eviction, and they forget about the rest of the Act, which said, and Unlawful Occupation of Land Act, which made it unlawful to invade or occupy land that's not yours.
Yeah.
And this is what we're dealing with here in this area. And so that Act, you know,
the second part is forgotten, and that is something.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, the this land cabal They call it land farming. This is what the term they've coined, because it's becoming so prevalent, and it's not even a headline story anymore because it's happening everywhere.
Yeah. Penny, one must also never lose sight of the fact that, while we all have sympathy for the landowner, this is an issue that affects all of us. Because when you undermine land rights, you undermine everybody's rights to land. Because if land can simply be invaded, and people can intimidate the sheriff and the municipality and continue with their invasions with impunity, who's next?
Yeah.
And then what happens to land values in this area? And people go, well, I don't really want to invest in this area because, it's a little bit unruly, and I might buy a piece of land for development and lose it to squatters.
Yes.
So it's very important for all of us that the law be upheld. Secondly, as a country, we got very low levels of direct foreign investment at the moment because people don't have faith in this country. We in 2024, Cyril Ramaphosa signed into law the new Expropriation Act, which provided for nil compensation.
Yeah.
Now nobody's going to bring a large investment, a $1 billion investment, to an area where your investment could just be taken by the state at nil. So these are very, not only very important local issues, it's a very important national issue, and it's a very important issue for all of us. Whether you're black, white, colored, or Indian, if our economy starts tanking because we're not upholding the law here and it's seen as the Wild West, it's going to affect all of us.
So do you believe, we're not dealing with an isolated failure when we're looking at this particular property.
No, it's become
it's a systematic problem.
Well, I think, one of the things that you do know about human nature is if people can benefit themselves and make, if these people have been selling stands for 80,000 and upwards, and
some up to 150,000.
Yeah, pocketing the money. This is an extremely lucrative racket.
Absolutely.
Okay? And if nobody's going to stop them, why would they stop? They're making money.
So does it require urgent intervention to just end off? What is the next step? What do you think is the solution?
I think our courts and our South African police force, even the local municipality, they need to nip this in the bud, because it's just going to, if they don't, it'll just become a free-for-all.
Yeah.
To the detriment of all of us. And so the idea here would be to prosecute the ringleaders, because they've committed a massive fraud. And they've stolen money from people who are going to lose their money. Okay, in the long term, the person who put down 150,000 rand on land he'll never own is going to lose his money, because these crooks are not going to give the money back.
Absolutely.
And then, all you need is to make an example of a few ringleaders, and you'll nip the thing in the bud and you'll quell it. And what do we as citizens want? We just want a country where the laws are enforced and there's order, and we can all go about our lives freely and our businesses freely, and we can live safely. And that's been neglected, especially in a matter like this. So, things have to change. There's got to be some political will here to uphold the law.
Yeah, that's a very, very relevant point. Thanks, Gavin. Now, I just want to let everyone know this is the first episode in a series. In the weeks ahead, we'll continue to unpack how land is sold without authority, how buyers are drawn in, and how these cases move or fail to move through the courts. We'll document what happens next on the ground and inside the system as this plays out in Kwadukuza. Because the question this story raises is not whether the law exists, it's whether it is still capable of being enforced. Thank you for joining me, Gavin. This is Uncensored. I'm Penny Faree.
Yeah, cool. Thank you, Penny.
Uncensored with Penny Faree is proudly brought to you by IPSS Electronic Security.
When it comes to security, don't leave it to chance. Trust the experts at IPSS Security, as the only CISA-approved security provider on the Dolphin Coast in all categories and the only local security company also accredited for CCTV off-site monitoring. With over 4 million rand invested in AI technology, they protect over 35 upmarket residential estates, spotting threats in real time. If action is needed, their rapid response and tactical teams, backed by the largest fleet in the region, is ready to act. For unmatched security, contact IPSS Security today at 0861 324 777. Your safety is their priority.